All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Kunal Patel with the Dallas Federal Reserve. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jason. How about you?
Not too bad. We got two things to talk about today. We got the energy survey, which came out at the end of June, early part of July. The next one is in September. But you also have an event coming up that we want to make sure that we educate the masses about as well. So just kind of, what was the main takeaway from the latest survey that came out? It was released the end of June, correct?
That's correct. And end of June, so exact date, June 26th. Main takeaways. Let me just let everyone know that that our Dallas Fed Energy Survey, we survey about 200 upstream oil and gas firms located in our district. We are part of the 11th district of the Federal Reserve, so it's Texas, Southern New Mexico, and Northern Louisiana. We had about 138 energy firms respond in the latest quarter. The title we put out for the survey is Oil and Gas Activity Rises Modestly as Production and Employment is Little Changed. Main takeaways is that oil production and gas production indexes, they were near zero, suggesting production was essentially unchanged compared to the last quarter. We saw some improvements with oilfield services firms when we're looking at their equipment utilization. But then on the other side, we saw mild deterioration in margins and prices received for services. And then, of course, the big takeaway from the survey is that the industry itself is kind of seeking a clear direction. What we're seeing is that employment and production is little changed, but we did see that slight uptick in activity in the latest quarter.
How about artificial intelligence? That seems to be on the top of executives' minds. I'm not sure if it's trickled down to the average person yet, outside of maybe a chat GTP or something like that. But I mean, in the oil and gas world, it's becoming pretty technical, a lot like how the coal industry went through a lot of robotics. But we're starting to see artificial intelligence happen in the boardrooms now, or in the offices, I guess. Was there anything on that?
Great question. So we did in our survey, we have a set of questions that change every quarter. So this quarter we did have some related to artificial intelligence, and you are correct. Slowly but surely, we haven't asked this question previously, but it looks like slowly but surely, AI is moving into to the oil field. We asked a question to kind of get the current state of who's using AI. We asked the question, is your firm currently using artificial intelligence? What we found is that roughly, let's say, a quarter of our firms are using some form of AI. Another quarter is not using AI, but plans to do so in the next 12 months. And then the last 50% say, no, we're not using AI and we don't plan to do so in the near future. And I think what they thought of the near future was about 12 months. Now, as you dig deep into the results, what we find is that, as we reported, the larger firms are more likely to say, hey, yes, we are using AI. So 50% of the large E&P firms, which we define as 10,000 barrels a day or more, are saying, yes, we do use AI. The ones that are least likely to do it are the small E&P firms. Those are the firms that produce less than 10,000 barrels a day. Only about 16% are saying, hey, we currently use AI. And then services is somewhere in between. The hard thing with services is how do you define a large services firm versus a small services firm? I don't know if I can there were some other questions. I don't know if I want to cut it into different parts of how I respond to this, but we did ask a question on, how are you using AI? The most selected response of the ones that are using AI is business analysis or predictive analytics. There was then process automation, geology or reservoir engineering, and then predictive maintenance. So these are some of the ones you've probably heard of how AI is being used. I think business analysis or predictive analytics, more of like a more generalized term that's used across multiple industries about trying to better understand trends within one's industry. But then some things like predictive maintenance, geology, or reservoir engineering is very specific to the industry itself. One last point I should add is we did ask what benefits have they experienced or do they expect to experience. Increased productivity was the number one thing selected, roughly about a little bit over 60% said increased productivity. After that, it was access to better or more timely information, followed by reduction in costs.
Well, that's where I would think the entry level would be is more of, okay, how can we increase our bottom line? And there's a couple ways. One would be that the projections will be done much faster, much quicker. And the other way, of course, is a reduction of employees. And I'm not sure if you got into that connection as far as whether AI would add employees or would reduce employees, but is there anything along those lines, either from the trends or, because AI is a different animal, because it's job shifting at the end of the day. It's job shifting, much like robotics did, which is a different form of AI. Is there anything like that? I'm not sure if you can get into that or got into it or not, or if we're even in a premature phase with the AI to even uncover something like that, but that seems to be kind of the directions that we're going here, is that there's going to be an increase in revenue, but there's different ways that your revenue can increase, like I said, from quicker production or also just from, employment.
So 2 points to add. So we did ask this question, of course, like what benefits has your firm experienced, or does your firm expect to experience? What was interesting is that the reduction in cost was selected by 47% of firms, and then increased revenue was selected by 16% of firms. Now, I should mention oil and gas. If you're an E&P firm, increased revenue, I guess, means either more production or a better price on your oil, natural gas, or natural gas liquids. And of course, the latter, it's a very, liquid market. You kind of, you're a taker of prices. So I guess you'd have to see more production. But, reduction in cost was selected by more. Maybe AI allows these firms to identify specific routes to reduce costs. Now, we did ask a question on employment, but we did it a year ago. So we did it in the second quarter of 2023. So we didn't want to ask it again because we thought it was still too early to have a definite answer. But we asked the question, do you expect artificial intelligence to replace some of your firm's personnel over the next 5 years? 78% said no, 22% said yes. But I should mention that when we're looking at the larger firms, 30% said yes. 70% said no. So larger firms were more likely to say, yes, AI may replace some of our employees, but it isn't a majority. It's still 30% saying yes, 70% saying no. We, of course, use the word some. So it may be that it reduces some of that 30%, but it could be, like you mentioned, job shifting.
How about some of the mergers, acquisitions, consolidations? There's been a slew of them over the past several years. Last 12 months been quite a bit. What type of outlook are people looking at with mergers and acquisitions or consolidations?
So I think I would start with a question that we asked back in, I believe, the fourth quarter of 2023. And so in that survey, so again, this is almost like a year ago, we asked the question was, in October 2023, acquisitions of two E&P companies valued at $50 billion or more were announced. Do you expect more deals of this size to occur in the next 2 years? 77% said yes. So most of the executives say yes, these large acquisitions are going to continue. I think when you look back to the first 6 months of this year, while we didn't have one that was 50 billion or more, we did have quite a few that were, like, let's say 10 billion or more. And so it was still a very active first half of the year. It was still much more active than many other of the previous half years, except for, of course, that fourth quarter of 2023. Now, what we were thinking is a key question to ask to know, because there's so much consolidation occurring, is what impact will it have on production? So we asked the question, what impact on U.S. oil production would you expect if there were continuing industry consolidation in the U.S. E&P sector over the next 5 years? Oil production would be. The idea of this question is, you kind of think what's going to happen in 5 years. If there was no consolidation, there was consolidation, what do you think is going to happen and what's the difference? So the most selected answer was slightly lower, but I should mention that we didn't get 50% or more. It was 48%. No impact was 22%, and then slightly higher was 22%. So there's still some that were saying it could be slightly higher, still some that were saying no impact. 48% says slightly lower. When we think through the reasons of why you could be slightly lower, I think it's clear that as you consolidate, there are less players out there. You could also potentially say that, if there is a spike in oil prices, then it's the small firms that react faster than the larger ones. On the flip side, you could see consolidation being a good thing in that it may lower the cost of production, and so you'll be able to drill and complete more wells. On top of that, while we don't know what will happen to the price of oil, if the bigger companies are able to weather lower prices, and if there was a downturn, then these firms would be able to again weather the downturn faster and hopefully have more production than if there was a bunch of small companies.
So we talked about mergers, acquisitions, consolidation. Let's talk about non-traditional revenue sources for these oil and gas companies. And some are getting into biofuels, some are getting into carbon sequestration. I know some are looking at lithium down in your neck of the woods. I don't know if that's because of the Tesla plant or what the deal is down there, but in Willcox, Arizona, for example, there's a Canadian firm going down to do some lithium mining in the Playa. What's going on in the lithium market? I know you guys asked a question. What kind of results did you get with the lithium?
So what we've heard from contacts is I think there's like this kind of connection with lithium, right? It could be found in the oil field brine, and so that's where
The
oil
brine.
companies, they may have a expertise, right? Because they've been drilling and completing wells for so long, and having to also do something with all this brine that comes out with every barrel of oil. And so we did ask, a couple questions. One, the first one was to make sure that they are aware that companies are attempting to extract lithium from oil field brine, and generally the answer was yes. So 71% just said yes. But then we followed up the question with, is your firm doing work related to extracting lithium from oil field brine? And so 5% of firms said yes, we currently are. 6% said no, but we're likely to do so in the next 5 years. 17% said no, but somewhat likely to do so in the next 5 years. And then 73% said no and not likely to do so. Now, I should mention that I think when you look publicly, it's a lot of the larger companies that have announced plans to do so. It may be that there is a significant amount of capital needed. It may be that it's not exactly l related to your main source of income. Obviously, like oil and gas is your main source of income. This is an additional revenue source. And so it looks to be something that is, as one would call it, up and coming. I think it'll be important to see what the results are. And so it's something that they are aware of and that companies look to be slowly doing.
I've gotten a few comments from some people in North Dakota in the Bakken oil field that the companies are requiring more energy, and whether it's production or whether it's new technology, but it seems that some of these companies are, requiring a little bit more energy than what they have in the past. What did you find anything along those lines in the survey?
So I'm not sure when they say a little bit more energy, like one thing.
Power consumption, essentially.
So in Texas specifically, like the Permian Basin, there is this big move for electrification of the oil field. I think traditionally, obviously, we're having more and more wells coming online. Historically, maybe they're using some type of generator if there isn't access to the grid. Again, many of these are in remote locations. But what we're seeing in West Texas is that power demand is increasing double digits, 10, 20% per year. I think there's a lot of demand. And we do get these comments from executives. We don't endorse them, but they provide color into their business. And they definitely mentioned that power consumption is continuing to grow in the West Texas ERCOT region. That No, it suggests that, power cost will increase. Big question mark is, what will availability of grid power look like in the future? But there's definitely a lot of demand for power in the oil field, whether it's electrification of frac fleets, continuing to use electric power for your operations, moving away from whether it's generators, whether it's diesel generators, natural gas generators, just a move to electrify the oil field. The benefits that have been listed is, of course, once you use power from the grid, they generally say that the cost is lower, and that the emissions are lower. On the flip side, though, of course, it requires building up infrastructure, whether it's from the utility side, but also the operator side, for it to occur.
Looking at your special comments here, and we've got one more to discuss before we transition into your event you have coming up. And this one might be new to some people that we're talking about a horseshoe pattern or a U-shaped pattern with the lateral drills. We've talked about some 2, 3 mile lateral drills, but now talking about the horseshoe drilling or the U-shaped drilling, what are the operators saying down there with the horseshoe or U-shaped drilling?
Great questions. I'm glad you asked it. Like, what we have either heard or read is that when you have a lease and it's limited by the size, right? Because a lot of times you want to drill these 2 or 3 mile laterals, but let's say your lease can only kind of hold a 1 mile lateral. What you can do is drill horizontally and then turn in terms of a horseshoe or U shape the wellbore, and then come back and drill that lateral back so that you get a total 2 or 3 mile lateral. What it looks to do is it allows you to potentially save time, potentially reduce costs compared to drilling 2 wells with half that lateral length. We did ask a question: has your firm experimented with drilling horizontal laterals in a horseshoe pattern or U-shaped pattern? Yes, response was selected by, I'd have to get the exact number. I think it's 5% said yes, 7% said no, but we plan to do so in the next 2 years. And then the no was 89%. Again, though, I think one thing to consider is that this is where you need a specific reason to do so, because otherwise you would just drill that full 2 mile lateral. Now, we did, of course, also follow it up with, do you expect drilling horizontal laterals in a horseshoe pattern or U-shaped pattern to become more widely used in the next 2 years? And 45% said yes, compared to 55% saying no. So again, 45% yes, 55% no. So it suggests that this trend may increase in the future. A lot of it's again going to have to be because you have a lease, you're limited in how long you can drill that horizontal lateral. You believe that you can get a better return by drilling it in a U shape. It may be that as it's done more, there's some key learnings that are learned. But what the survey suggests is that it will increase from that small base in the future.
So what's the energy event you have coming up? I saw that, I think I saw it on LinkedIn or maybe on the Federal Reserve site when I was checking out the latest survey, but talk to me, give me the details.
Absolutely. So we'll be having our 9th joint energy conference. It's co-hosted by the Federal Reserve Banks of Dallas and Kansas City. This year's event is called Energy and the Economy: Meeting Rising Energy Demand. As many of you know, energy demand continues to increase. We think it's important to bring together business leaders, central bankers, government officials, academics, and financial market representatives to discuss how do we go about meeting rising energy demand. In the face of, how as we in face of the energy transition, in face of the fuel mix changing, the topics discussed will be the outlook for global energy markets, as well as developing domestic energy infrastructure at scale and meeting rising power demand. It'll be on Wednesday, November 13th this year. It's an all-day event. It's going to be held in Dallas, Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. But there is an option to live stream. So on our website, there's a link in which you can register for in person if you'd like to come to Dallas, or you can live stream it so you can see it anywhere you'd like in the US. Again, this is our 9th annual energy conference. I think we have a great lineup of speakers. Would be great to have you there. But also, please feel welcome to join us virtually too. We definitely understand that many of you may be located far outside Dallas, but you can still catch the event via Zoom.
Is it pretty much a nuts and bolts type of a conference? Is there what type of clientele or attendees have been there in the past? Is it pretty high level, or can, a middle manager go, or is it mostly just the executives?
I would say we have a mix, but like it's perfect for middle executives.
Oh, okay.
And it's structured a little bit different in that we don't have like, it's not like a 5-day event. We like to pack what we think is most important into one day. There are essentially 4 sessions. 3 of them are kind of structured around, a presentation, and then from each of the speakers in the session. And then the last session is our panel discussion with our energy sector executives. And so I think that when I look through the list of attendees, we have a wide range. But I think a lot of times, if you're a middle level manager, these insights throughout the sessions are very helpful. And then hearing from the executives is also very insightful.
Is there a keynote? Is there kind of a main event type of a thing? Or is there, what's the theme? I guess I think you said it, but what, just kind of reset that real quick if there's a keynote and what the theme is once again.
So we do have like 2 standalone speeches. You can kind of consider them to be the keynotes there. Our Dallas Fed president will be speaking, and then the Kansas City Fed president will be speaking. And so I
Okay.
kind of consider those kind of like our keynotes. And then again, in each of our sessions, there are 3 speakers. I think you'll find them to be very high quality, very insightful. The theme this year is meeting rising energy demand. I think when we brainstorm all the ideas of what's going on this year, there's a key theme that energy demand is increasing. I think even if you look at oil, natural gas for sure, I think everyone's going to debate whether coal is going to hit a peak this year or not. But there are signs that coal demand will be even higher this year than last. We'll have to see. Maybe last year was the peak. We'll see. But at the same time, wind and solar is also increasing. And then within the power sector, there's this big topic around onshoring of manufacturing, data centers, hydrogen, electric vehicles, all these things are supposed to increase power demand. And how do we go about that in the energy sector in terms of delivering this to consumers on, reliable, of cost-effective energy? Because energy is a very important part of our economy.
Anything on carbon? That seems to be the new buzzword and the new direction that a lot of I joke that I don't joke, but I noticed Occidental Petroleum is no longer an oil and gas company or a petroleum company, and Oxy is no longer an energy company. Oxy is now a carbon management company. But at the same time, the Federal Reserve isn't into future projections. You guys are more straight nuts and bolts. Here's the reality of where we're at. Have you guys gotten to that carbon management part of energy yet?
I know this topic will get covered in our session 2. Our session 2 is called Developing Domestic Energy Infrastructure at Scale Amid Constraints. Our idea behind that session is that, energy demand is increasing. There is a clear demand for infrastructure. However, building it at scale with our current constraints poses some challenges. And so the purpose of that session is to kind of go through that, and we do have a speaker that looks like we'll at least touch on carbon, like you mentioned, because carbon is a key part, because there's a need for more energy, but there's also this demand for lower carbon energy future. And so within that, that's how CCUS kind of nicely fits in. And so my understanding is it'll get covered in that session.
Kunal Patel, Dallas Federal Reserve. Always a pleasure, good sir. Any final thoughts?
No, we do have again our energy survey. Our next energy survey will be released Wednesday, September 25th, 9:30 a.m. Central Time. You can find it on our Dallas website. Of course, also we'd love to have you join at our annual energy conference. Again, it's our ninth annual energy conference. You can attend in person, but also if you can't make it to Dallas and you find the information and the insights useful, please do live stream the event.